Yvonne Cox arrived at Campbell in the fall of 1996, fresh off of West Virginia's state amateur title, and joined a golf program that would become one of the nation's best over the next 4 years. A relative late starter in the game, Vonnie's all-around athleticism and competitive drive propelled her to a pair of top 10 finishes in the ASUN Championship and two NCAA regional appearances. After she graduated in 2000, Vonnie qualified for the U.S. Women's Amateur Championship, then embarked on a professional career. Over 5 seasons, she made 64 starts on the LPGA developmental circuit, now known as the Epson Tour, and qualified for the 2004 U.S. Open. She entered the business field and took an extended break from the game, but regained her passion for the sport. She's already won a pair of tournaments while producing a top 10 finish at the 2023 LPGA Senior Championship. Through the years, she stayed in contact with her fellow Campbell Golf alumni and has returned to participate in the annual Battle for the Creek tournament in early November. Now based in Williamsburg, Virginia, Vonnie is a teaching pro in addition to competing on the Legends of the LPGA Tour. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is the next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who have made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by former Campbell Golf standout Yvonne Cox Holmes. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Vonnie, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Stan. I appreciate the offer to do this today.
Hey, Vonnie, let's just start out at the beginning. Tell us about where you grew up and how you got your start in sports.
Well, I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia. Sports was definitely my life and an upbringing for me, as my whole family was pretty involved in sports, where my mom was a tennis professional for a couple years. My grandmother was a physical education teacher and also coached softball and basketball. I had an uncle who was a PBA bowler for a few years. And the apple didn't fall far from the tree, let's say. So sports was definitely, you know, a huge, I guess that's what really brought us together as a family was really sports.
Was your first introduction just kind of watching, or did y'all get together and like go bowling or play tennis, or how, and then after that, how did you get started in organized sports?
Yeah. So I started sports at such a young age. I was, you know, I started, you know, T-ball at like 4 years old. So my uncle was involved into coaching like little league baseball at the time, because I had a cousin that was 4 or 5 older than myself. And so just, you know, by him going to the ball field, plus I only lived about a half a mile from the ball field, so it was easy to see from my house. And, you know, I just kind of followed the crowd as, you know, everybody went to the fields. And of course, I grew up on a street with 10 boys, no girls. So wherever they were going, I was going. So it was just so easy to go down the ball field with to go and start playing. And I kept playing and enjoying the games and so forth. I got into playing Little League. And then next, you know, I'm playing All-Stars in softball. Then it became basketball when I got into junior high. And then as I started to get a little older, my mom used to run me all over the tennis court. I think she did it deliberately that was my punishment if I was being a bad little kid or something like that. I think it was like, okay, let's go to the tennis court. I'll run you around for a little bit. But that's how I really got into organized sports. And then my grandmother took me a time or two to play golf here and there, because it was a huge love for my grandmother. Nobody else in my family knew anything about golf, but we had a little place kind of up where I went to high school. It was called Coonskin Park, still there today. And we'd play a little bit there. It was a small little golf course, nothing fancy. And then it didn't really take shape then. But one day I went riding up the street on my bike, and the boys had their their golf bags out and were swinging in the yard. And they said, hey, you know, we're going to go to the golf course. And I'm like, well, I want to go. Of course, I go to my grandma's. I'm like, I need your golf clubs because I don't have any golf clubs. And so I grab my grandmother's bag and some golf balls, and we go right up the street, which you say right up the street, but in West Virginia, we say just up the holler. You know, and up on the top of the hill there is a par three golf course that was called Cato Park. It was $3 to play nine holes and $1 for each additional round to play golf there. And wow. Yeah, it's really cheap, right? You can't find golf like that now. But so I kept going up there with the boys, you know, day after day. And after a few weeks, I just started getting better. And I enjoyed it. And the boys stopped playing, actually. But I enjoyed it so much that I kept going up there. And then over time, the I like to call them the old farts, the old guys, they kind of brought me in, and I started putting for quarters on the putting green. And before you knew it, I had a scholarship offer to go to Campbell, and as well as a softball scholarship offer to go to Campbell. But I'd already committed to Coach Crooks to be a part of the golf team. So as you can probably think, it was probably meant in the stars for me to go to Campbell, to have an offer from Team Sports to go to Campbell. So that's kind of cool.
You know, Vonnie, if you were to go back about 40 or 50 years, two sport offers from the same school weren't unheard of. You know, Wanda Watkins, when she signed on to become the first female scholarship athlete at Campbell, she was signed on to play field hockey, basketball, and softball to divide her scholarship among three sports. Of course, the field hockey team only lasted for 2 years, and Wanda will tell you she never played because she hurt her knee. But, you know, but to have, you know, in the Division I age, to have offers in multiple sports, you know, it's pretty remarkable. What, you know, you were an all-state player in softball. You were a starter and captain on the basketball team. What was it about golf that made you decide, hey, this is it?
Well, you know, I think somewhat the decision was made for me, but I didn't really understand it at the time, is that when I just started really getting into golf, there wasn't any scholarship on the table. There wasn't even any thought of that at the time. Mm-hmm. The whole thought was basically I was going to college for softball was the thought. Is that when I was playing a pickup game of basketball during gym class, I actually broke my fibula.
Ooh.
on my left leg. And so, and actually it was a clean break. And because of that, he goes, listen, you're not going to be able to play softball this summer. Like, you're not going to be able to slide. You can't jump. You can't do all those things. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, can I play golf? And he said, yeah, I think that should be okay. As long as you're not running or jumping or doing any of that, it should be perfectly fine for you to play golf. And so because I could do that, my one love switched to a greater love, and that was into golf. And I eventually had a couple of young friends that I could play golf with, and what turned into just playing like nine holes every day turned into playing six rounds of nine holes every day.
Wow.
And it just, you know, I found, I guess, a love in the game that, you know, you never really know it until you just continue to play and you build friendships and you build relationships in golf. And I think that's the one untold thing is about the golf community, and, you know, learning that at such a younger age. Mm-hmm. And developing those relationships that I still have relationships with to this day. I just think we don't talk about those enough. I mean, the golf community is so special.
Vonnie, I'm curious about this, especially when you, you know, you joined a Division I college team that had already participated in the NCAA championships and the regionals, and you had players from all over the country and all over the world on the team. You know, you got a relatively late start. How did you catch up so quickly, you know, to these other players who might have been playing, 7-8 years longer than you had?
Well, you know, I think some of it has to be my athletic ability, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think also, too, is that there's a mindset and there's a drive to an athlete.
Right.
That sometimes just can't be taught. I am such a competitor. There might be some athletes out there that will outwork me, do something a little bit better than me or something like that. But I say it all the time. No one will ever outcompete me.
Mm-hmm.
I will fight to the end for sure. So I think it's just, how did I catch up? It's really hard to say, but I think a mental attitude and a strong work ethic will propel you much further than what, a talented player will have, but being a talented athlete as myself and mental attitude and working hard, I think that it will always put you in the right places. No matter what you do, it doesn't even have to be athletics, just in life in general.
Well, absolutely. Vonnie, did you have any athletic or sports heroes, in general, and golf in particular?
Well, my sports hero, somebody that I looked up to as a younger age, was Pat Summitt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Just that fierce. You could just, on her face, she was such a fierce competitor. She had so much fire, and she was so hard on her players. But, she was teaching them skills. She was teaching them life skills, which was, it propels into your life and into your athletics. And it's kind of like the tough love mentality.
Right.
And so I just loved that. I was like, man, that would be amazing to play for somebody like that, to be in a room with someone like that. And luck would have it is that my professional teacher, Dana Rader, she was an absolute carbon copy of Pat Summitt. Tough love. I would love to have both of them in the same room together.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just, there was a lot of discipline that was there from those two people that I looked up to. But as a golf individual that I looked up to, the Dottie Peppers of the world, oh my gosh, the drive and the fire. I remember my mom taking me to the 1994 Solheim Cup, which was in West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
at the Greenbrier, and just watching like the Dottie Peppers, the Beth Daniels, like these are Hall of Fame like legends that I looked up to, and now I get to play along with, which is has come. It's very surreal for me sometimes when I get to be in their presence. And I feel pretty humbled that I actually get to have Julie Inkster's number in my phone. these are pretty cool things, and people that I've played golf with and been able to sit and have conversations with, and they look at me as an equal. I'm in the same room with them and competing with them, nor do I have their resume as they do. but it's amazing to look up to these ladies and what they do and how they work still on their game. But another player that I actually did get to play with at a younger age was at the 04 US Open, Suzanne Pedersen.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about a competitor. She was the captain for the European Solheim Cup team last year.
Mm-hmm.
Just, oh my gosh, to watch this lady just work. I played a practice round with her, and she was the most gracious, classic individual. When you look at her, you think, oh my gosh, you would be so intimidated to approach her, because she had a look on her face that she might just kill you for saying hello. But she was actually so polite and so often, and offered up so much just information and encouragement. Just so many things when I played in the 04 US Open. I was blown away.
Vonda, you mentioned being attracted to strong, discipline type coaching and
yes,
that atmosphere. It's interesting over the years, your head coach, John Crooks, he was known as being kind of a no-nonsense guy for years and years, and he's mellowed over the age as he's become a grandfather and everything. But, was that part of the what worked for you? Because, he did have high standards and expected, work ethic was a non-negotiable with him and still isn't, correct?
I think Coach, the way that he set the precedent for when we were there was very different than how I speak of these ladies. Yes, he was on a certain level of discipline, but the ladies that I spoke of, they were on a top level.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they did it and the way Coach does it was two different things, you know. How do I put this into terms? Is yes, he was very tough on us. But I think what drove us and how we practiced was that the type of players that I was surrounded with, we all wanted to work hard and we all wanted to do well and we all had goals. And I think for the most part, we all encouraged each other, to play our best golf is how I like to think. So he recruited the best players to encourage each other. And I think that's what still continues today. Is that I think one of the players here not too long ago mentioned, or actually it was the coach, actually Moot, mm-hmm. the men's coach or whatever, mentioned, the players are friends. They have a very tight relationship. And I think has probably really describes how the teams have been over the years since I even started going to Kimball. And even the ladies before me, the Maria Maldonados, the Evelyn Kimlaws, the Martha Shooters, like, they're all still really close friends, and I'm close friends with them. And I appreciate that. Those relationships to drive each other to play well and competitiveness between all of us, I think forms a discipline amongst the team when you have players like that. Yes, Coach demanded us to be at practice. He wanted us to work on this, do this, and whatever. But it was in a different way than the ladies that I spoke of.
Vonnie, during your career, Campbell won 22 team tournament titles in 4 years, including a school record 8 during the 97-98 season. Your mm-hmm. teammates included at least 4 players, Mara Leroy, Kylie Pratt, Laura Teresi, and Sharon O'Neill, who would go on to join you on the Futures Tour. What was that daily competition like in practice?
It just mentions the dedication that you have to be, that you have to have to be able to become an elite player. I mean, you have to want to be able to improve, and you have to want to be able to and be okay and be comfortable in the trenches when it's not so comfortable. I mean, golf is a lonely sport. It is a lonely place. And you have to be okay with being in the lonely state of mind when you're out there playing, when you don't have people, or you're practicing and there's no one else around. You have to be okay with those moments. And I think, all those players that you just mentioned, we were all okay and we were very dedicated to honing our skills every day, all the time. So I think it's pretty awesome to be around elite athletes that just have the same goal in mind. And you're just, each of you are trying to, encourage each other, but at the same time, you want to kick each other's butt.
Right.
I mean, I have really great friends, that I compete with right now and I travel with. But you know what? When we stand on that first tee, you're not my friend anymore. You're my competitor, and I'm looking to win a golf tournament. So it's kind of a of a switch. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Over the Top. It was a Sylvester Stallone movie for arm wrestling. And he used to, before he went into a match, he would turn his hat around backward, which it was like a switch for him to get competitive. So I think, you know, we all have ways that we trigger our competitiveness. So when it's time to put our hat backwards and get to work. And then when it's time to just, you know, enjoy the community of golf and the people that you're sharing it with.
When I spoke to Coach Crooks about, you know, the fact that you were going to join me for this episode, he recalled that you and Laura, especially off the course, competed in basketball, swimming on the track. He said that y'all especially had a competitive drive against each other that went beyond Keith Hills.
That's true. Yeah, Laura and I did have a little bit of competitiveness outside of golf. I mean, I think people don't understand something about me is that I compete probably making a sandwich. it's just in my nature to compete. I don't know how to let it go. But yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that, playing basketball. Sometimes it got a little rough, and I don't think Coach liked that very much. we would bang each other around and hit the ground and get a few bumps and bruises and scrapes and all those fun things. But, you know, that's sports. You know, that's just, if you're going to play it hard. That's the way my mom always taught me. She said, you know, if you're going to foul somebody in basketball, if you're going to foul them, you better make it a good one. Okay, Mom.
Obviously, you've got some great family mentors and influences, and your mom, your grandma, your uncle. But I can't help but think that growing up around on a street with 10 boys really honed your competitive edge.
I 100% probably did. You know, I don't like to lose. I wasn't about to lose to these boys, even when it came to wiffle ball in the street or football in the street, or we actually had arm wrestling competitions. I was always the winner. I almost had to think that I had to be meaner than all of them. So they loved to play, and you know, at a young age, I think we all wanted to try to set your mark amongst the boys. I think I did that well.
Vonnie, getting back to your college career, what memories, tournaments, courses, anything from your playing career that still sticks out here, you know, 25 years later?
Well, there's quite a few memories, but I think there's a couple for sure. Our van rides were always quite interesting. You know, there's eight girls in this. You know, we had small vans back then. We don't get to have the luxury that they have today. And you know, we're sleeping on top of luggage. We're sleeping on each other. We're laying on the floor. We're trying everything we possibly can. Feet all over the place. Trying to catch a few Z's, you know, and those were some of the fun moments, and just laughing and giggling and singing. I'm sure Coach probably wanted a lot of earplugs with our group and music. So those are some fun times. But you know, some things that didn't have anything to do with golf was when we had like our ice storms, like our snowstorms, and we would, a couple of us would go sledding down Keith Hills, you know, down the first hole or down, you know, what is now nine, and have some fun doing that. And then, you know, just some of the things that we would help fix, you know, be a part of the golf course when we had hurricanes, you know, those are fun things for us to get out and do and, you know, kind of play around with each other, do those kind of things. But so there's been a lot of great moments that we did just hanging out with one another. We spent a lot of time at each other's houses and or apartments or dorms. You know, I think you know, when you're in the moment, you're like, oh, you can't wait till you get out, you know, whatever. But now that I'm almost 50, I'm like, man, those were easy times compared to now. But yeah, there's a lot of great memories from Campbell for sure.
Bonnie, in your senior year, Campbell finished individuals, claimed the top three spots in the ASUN championship. What do you remember about that tournament?
What do I remember about that tournament? I do remember, it's kind of come full circle. You know, I live here in Williamsburg, Virginia, and I'm actually a member at Golden Horseshoe, which mm-hmm. we had that championship at William & Mary, which is, there's the gold and the green course, which the green course is the course we were playing. And I remember the 18th hole, I hit an eight iron, and I missed my mark by like 2 feet, and it hits the downslope of the bunker and shoots across the green, and it I didn't get up and down to be able to beat my teammate Kylie to win that tournament. That's what I remember, and I still haven't played that golf course to this day. I am not ready to face that yet. But that's what I remember of that tournament. It's funny, I still remember that 8 iron. I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, this looks good. Come to find out, I was about 2 feet short.
Wow.
That's golf, though.
Absolutely. Vonnie, you know, you had the chance to line up against some of the nation's best golfers in the NCAA regionals. What do you remember about that? And, you know, and that was really a, you know, kind of a sneak peek of what you'd be doing over the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, you know, it's it was awesome to compete against people that I was going to be competing with on a higher level, and then later becoming you know kind of acquaintances and also friends with some of those folks who played with other schools. And you know, and one of the unique things about the Futures Tour back then, and I'm sure it's the same as it is, maybe the same now, I talked to a few players, but not many, was the camaraderie of the Futures Tour. I mean, we all had one goal, and that was to make it to the LPGA. And we were all, excuse the expression of this, but we were all fighting like hell to try and get there. It was early mornings. It was a lot of practice. It was a lot of encouragement to each other. And, you know, we're all in the same boat. Mm-hmm. And so if we're going to sink or swim, we've got to help each other out. So I think, you know, getting to know some of them already and then moving into the next chapter of our lives made the transition easier. Because it is. It's a lonely road when you're traveling every week to a new city, new hotel, new host family. And if you don't have people to share that with, it can be really, really lonely.
Right.
So I feel very grateful that I've known some of these people and have made great relationships and still have a lot of those relationships to this day.
Our guest today on Tales from the Creek is Campbell golfing great Yvonne Cox Holmes. Vonnie, I've just got to ask, when did you know that you could play professional golf and take that next step?
I don't know if there was a moment that I knew that I could play professional golf. I just knew at a very young age, even before I played golf, that I wanted to be a professional athlete.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted in life. And, you know, at the time, you know, in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of options for females. You had like Olympic softball or basketball, but there was not a lot of options. And so golf ended up presenting itself. And, you know, and I worked really hard at it and I loved the game and I enjoyed the, you know, just the practicing of it and the competing and the grind. And so that's really You know, whether it was golf or anything else, I knew that I wanted to be a professional athlete. Competing is just, it's a big part of my soul. So.
Tell us a little bit about your transition from the amateur game to your pro career.
The transition.
Right. I mean, you finished playing in the regionals, and then you qualified for the USAM, right? And did you go to Q school in the fall, or what were the steps?
Yeah, so for the transition for it was, you know, you had to go through a series of qualifying. You had to go through one qualifier of four rounds, and they made a cut, and then they had two different locations for that, and then everybody came together. And then you had one other qualifier to whether you're going to have full status or partial status to the futures tour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, when I qualified, I actually was just a couple spots out of full status,
mm-hmm.
but I ended up playing a full status season. I actually ended up playing fairly well in my first half season that I played on the futures tour, which solidified me for being a full status participant on the tour. And then I ended up actually being over the next few years in the top 30 of players.
Right.
For the futures tour. So I did really well solidifying myself as a prominent player for the futures tour. I just couldn't quite get over the hump to get to the LPGA. Reasons being was in the off seasons, you know, most players are, you know, they're working hard on their game, their fitness, their everything when it comes to golf, whereas I was working two jobs. I didn't have sponsors or anything, so I had to work two jobs to keep myself afloat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would stop working about 2 weeks prior to the season starting, and still for myself to be in the top 30 of players through all of that. I think I did pretty well for myself. And sometimes I wonder, you know, if I had the opportunities to work on my game during the off seasons to get better like I do now, where I could be at this time versus at this current position. But you know, everything happens for a reason. I'm a firm believer of that. Didn't understand, you know, the lessons that I was going to be learning and the, you know, just kind of the growing up and maturing as an individual in this world. So.
Bonnie, you and your college teammate, Kylie Pratt, both qualified for the 2004 U.S. Women's Open. Tell us about that process and what you remember about the event at the Orchards Golf Course in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that was really awesome that we qualified actually at the same course. We didn't go to the same local qualifier, but we went to the same regional qualifier because they used to do it. You had a local 18 holes and then you had a 36 hole day at a regional spot, but now they just do 36 holes and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Kylie and I actually both qualified at a course up in just outside of Detroit. That was really awesome to get one of those spots, you know, with one of my teammates from school and good friends from school and so forth. And then we go on to the Orchards and just friends and people that we had supporting us both was outstanding. So it was such a fun week, you know, getting our Lexus and for the week and just being around all the amazing players. As I mentioned, I got to play a practice round with Suzanne Pedersen, and Kylie went and played with some of her Aussie people. She got to play with Kari Webb.
Right.
But, you know, we could come together and practice together, and our parts of our families and friends were together. So it was just what an amazing week. A lot of great memories to that.
Who from your family was able to come see you play up in Massachusetts?
Yeah, my mom and uncle and grandmother came up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that had to be such a special moment for you. Did you ever sit around and think, you know, not too long ago, I was, you know, putting for quarters in West Virginia. Here I am standing on the tee box at the greatest stage, you know, the greatest championship in the nation.
You know, I reflect probably a little bit more on it now because so many people ask me questions. There's a lot of Q&As that I'm a part of, work that I do at other in other states with ladies groups. We give them Q&A sessions, and that's typically, that's usually a question that usually comes up, is, you know, give a little backstory. And I always talk about how I rose from quarters on the putting green to, you know, professional status and winning professional golf tournaments. So, you know, everybody's story is different, but everybody's goals are somewhat the same.
Mm-hmm.
Are all striving for one place to get to.
Bonnie, share with us a little bit, if you will, about leaving, you know, professional touring golf and moving into the business world. And then what prompted you to pick up the clubs again?
Yeah. You know, it was just a time of my life. I was going to be 29 years old, and I made the decision to just stop golf. I just wasn't being able to put in the work that I needed to, because I had the work and two jobs and so forth. So it was a very hard decision for me, and it was a very really tough transition for me. I actually, for 3 years after I quit playing, I was lost. I was absolutely lost. Sports was my whole life. I didn't know anything other than sports. That was my daily routine since I was a very young kid. And so trying to figure that out, you know, not going to the gym and getting into the work and whatever, that was a very tough transition. And then a friend of mine, actually a friend of a friend, came to me and said, "Hey, listen, I have a position available. I think we could work very well together." And that really started my whole sales career for 18 years after golf was over, and ended up being in the top 1% at one point of the company that I worked for. And I owe a lot to my athletics for being, you know, in the top 1%, for working hard and, you know, treating it as a sport, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But also, too, I also treat it to my friend who was my boss, you know. She was that type of, her leadership was that type of tough love that I'm used to. And right. So it drove me. So it drove me to being the best that I could be. So did that. And then I actually met my wife back in 2019. And just through getting to know each other, she goes, "I see that you still have a lot of passion for golf, and I think that you need to get back into this." Like, I really do. And so... at one point, so I moved up here to Williamsburg, and so we became members of Golden Horseshoe. And so I started playing as much as I could in between work and so forth. Plus it was the COVID times, so there was a lot more options. You know, you could get out on the golf course a lot easier than you can now.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I kept getting out there every day and hitting balls and playing, I met people, and that spark came back, and it came back with a vengeance. So just kept going, and we ended up moving. After we got married, we moved to Texas, and we moved into a golf community there, became members of that golf course, and oh my gosh, the members... everybody just basically swarmed around me between my wife and the members. The level of support is just unbelievable. And so after about a year and a half, I started research. I'm like, oh, you know what? I might just try a golf tournament. Why not? I don't have anything to lose. And read up that there was the Texas Open that was coming. Really didn't know, you know, the type of players that were going to be playing in it. But luck would have it is that actually I'm playing with the Legends Tour mm-hmm. in my first event. And I'm paired with Michelle Redmond, Tammy Green. These are future Hall of Famers and legends in their own right. And had the most amazing day. Shot 69. Was tied for the lead of a golf tournament. And shoot 69 the next day. And I'm tied for the lead again. And then I ended up finishing third in the tournament. I mean, the last few holes, like, I was in a position like, oh my gosh, like, what do I do? And so it was just amazing. And just their, just the player support who I met at that event and some other faces of like, who are you? And so I had this, so if I played well in this, I told myself if I played well in this, there was the Legends of the LPGA Championship that you could actually do a Monday qualifier to. And I said, okay, if I play well, I'm going to enter and do that. And then I was telling these ladies that I played with at the Texas Open, they said, you have to do it. This is what you need to do. Just go play your game. And the game that you have right now, you will certainly qualify. So I had encouragement from these players that are already legends themselves, which is makes you feel good, gives you the warm and fuzzies for sure. It gives you a lot of confidence. And even up to the day of the qualifier, the Monday qualifier, they were still texting me and encouraging me. And so then I qualified and finished in tied for seventh. For the Legends Championship, which, you know, everybody's like, who are you? And why, you know, where'd you come from? All these things, you know, I have, you know, these players are like, listen, you know, we want to buy you a beer. Come on over here. We want to get to know you. And I'm like, this is great. Like, this is awesome that, you know, that this is happening. And I played actually with a couple good players. And I can tell you, my final round of the LPGA Legends Championship, I played with Patricia Montier-Labouc.
Mm-hmm.
And if nobody knows that name, they got to look up that name. She played on many Solheim Cups for the European team. An incredible player, incredible teacher, just a classy human being. And boy, did we have the best time. On the final round playing golf, and it was such a joy. And I can tell you from that moment forward, just playing with her and playing with the other ladies, what had transpired over those few weeks from the Texas Open to the Legends Championship, I knew I was in the right place. Like, this was it. So I was like, you know what? My goals have changed. My goals are changing. I'm writing this down. I'm like, okay, how is this gonna, what do we need to do? What do I need to do? How do I start trying to prepare for this and kind of slowly working myself out of my sales career? Cause those two things aren't going to match.
Right.
And, you know, and just, you know, my wife's like, listen, you need to do this. So having the encouragement from my wife, from my family, for my friends, was just remarkable. And it still is to this day.
And Vonnie, you've recently, I think you mentioned that you've gained your level A status with the PGA, and are a teaching pro in addition to a touring pro.
I'm an LPGA certified,
right,
to be an LPGA teaching professional.
Right. So how do you go from, I know that the competitive season, you know, isn't all year long, but how do you go from one to the, you know, one to the other? or does it just all kind of work well for you?
It actually works very well for me because, yes, I'm a competitor, but I don't want a full 18-week schedule or doing something like that. So it's nice to break it up by teaching and growing the game and seeing my students improve. That actually gives me so much just warm and fuzzies to it. I just love it. I love to see my students improve and then wanting to play in tournaments and then doing well in tournaments. I have a 60-year-old right now. She's 61, actually. And she just retired, and we've been working together for the past few months. And she just sent me a text yesterday, actually, that she shot 69. And then she ended up finishing third in the tournament. I mean, these are awesome things that, I just feel like I can pass on to people and allow them to play their best golf and enjoy life.
Bonnie, is this kind of a full circle for you? You mentioned you're the first person you mentioned in your athletic heroes is Pat Summitt. You know, not only are you still competing, but now you're helping to coach.
Yeah.
As well.
This is definitely full circle for me. because where I came back to the game, because I came to Williamsburg and then we left and moved to Texas and then Atlanta, then we came back here. And it's funny that it's all come full circle that I'm back in Williamsburg where it all began, where I picked up the game again and just basically regained my spirit and for the game and competing. And now I'm the one who gets to show the tough love. I've been told by many of my students that I am definitely a tough love teacher. And obviously I've been taught by some of the best and looked up to some of the best, in the game and just, other people outside of the game. So it definitely has come full circle and I love it. I love it. I love being able to show tough love. I guess I get to get back at other people for what I went through.
Vonnie, what do you know now that you wish you might have known when you were younger?
Oh, what am I know now? I will say probably my fitness. The fitness aspect of the game is what I wish I would have. I don't think we had a lot of information about it then back in the 90s, mm-hmm. About how fitness and golf really relate. I don't think that really caught on until Tiger, right?
Right.
But I wish I would have had the same knowledge back then as I do now, because I can tell you 100%, it's the reason why I'm able to play this game and play it well and still hit it far and do the things that I do is all because of my fitness routine. I live in the gym, and I actually teach golf fitness. I'm actually looking to try and get TPI certified, mm-hmm. Here over the next year and a half. I think it takes almost about a year and a half to get certified. So I'm looking to do that, and it's an aspect of my life that I take is very important to me, are my workouts and improving and just the longevity of health. I work with a lot of seniors here in Williamsburg on doing some kind of some flex and mobility and strengthening, and just how well I've seen it improve for 70, 75-year-olds, 80-year-olds who I'm going and doing this with. And I can tell you 100%, if people aren't on the bus of being in the gym and they really want a golf career, they need to get on the bus.
Right. Vonnie, tell us a little bit about the Legends of the LPGA Tour and where are some of the places you'll visit this year.
Yeah, so the Legend LPGA, obviously, is some of the greatest players that you'll ever play golf with. The Julie Yingsters, the Christy Kurz, Dakari Webbs. You know, Anika is actually playing an event this week. You know, there's just so many great players that I get to tee it up with and be surrounded by and learn from and compete against. It's just a remarkable thing, and I feel so privileged that I get to do that. Our season's a little smaller this year, but it's going to be very jam-packed with some eventful things, and we'll add in some state opens. And actually here on Monday, I will fly to Connecticut to defend my title at the Connecticut Open. So we'll head up to Michigan and Indiana. We'll be in Nashville. And we'll be back up in kind of the New England area to kind of round out everything. And then Atlanta for the fall. And then I'll have some other like LPGA teaching events that will follow that come back in probably early December. So yeah, so there's some pretty awesome things in there and some new things that I look forward to for the season.
Bonnie, you're part of a Campbell women's golf history that includes 26 NCAA postseason appearances since 1994. What does being a part of that legacy mean to you?
I think it's extra special to be part of something, you know, as elite and special as the Campbell women's golf team, and just the, you know, Campbell athletics all together. I think there's been a lot of remarkable athletes, not only myself, but others as well that have come from Campbell. I think Campbell's had many baseball players and so forth that have come out. But I think it's always special to be part of a unique group. And I think that's what Campbell is. You know, people are like, oh yeah, I've heard of Campbell. And then there's a lot of people like, I don't know. I'm like, I've never heard of it before. You know, I think it has its own specialness. And I think until you experience it for yourself, I don't think it can ever really be put into words. I'm just very grateful that I got to be a part of Campbell Athletics and the golf team and play for coach. And you know, there was an old saying, I don't think I've told this story not to too many people, but there's an old saying back in the day, I don't know if you remember those Thai animals, those Thai babies that you could purchase back in the day, and they had mm-hmm. names to them,
right?
Well, the Thai camel was named Humphrey. Well, my family's name was Humphreys.
Wow.
And the kids, this was well before I was born. The kids on the street used to know three camels. One had two humps, one had one hump, and one was Humphrey. I guess, you know, maybe there was something written in the stars before it ever happened.
Let's wrap up with a few questions I always like to ask my friends in golf. Who makes up your ideal foursome?
Ideal foursome. Well, I think one of them would have to be Rory because he's my favorite player of all time. Probably my coach, Dana Rader.
Now you can give four plus one. We'll let you four, we'll four let you have one. Five. We'll let you have five. Oh, we can play five, including you. Yeah. To make it a little easier.
Yeah. So I think I would probably like to have, I know everybody likes to say Michael Jordan, but I think I would love to have Jordan since he was such a great competitor. And he's someone that I followed and watched as a young athlete. Then, you know, I think I would save the other two for two of my closest friends. Because for me, I like to share things with people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'd probably share it with two friends and have them come in and play with a few remarkable people.
What's the most difficult course you've played?
Most difficult. My gosh. Probably I've played some doozies. Trying to think right now. Probably last year I played Oak Hill up in Rochester, New York.
Wow.
And we played it from pretty back tees, and it was a very difficult. We tried to play it as far back as we could to kind of simulate the U.S. Open. And I'll tell you what, it was, oh my gosh, it was probably one of the toughest days, and we had 20 mile an hour winds to go with it. So that would probably be one of the toughest I've played so far. And here in 3 weeks, I'm playing Arcadia Bluff, so that may change.
What's your favorite golf course, Donnie?
You know, people ask me that all the time. I don't actually have a favorite golf course. I have favorites all over the world because of who I shared the course with. It's back to, you know, again, I like to share things with people, and that's the memory that I have, not versus the course. So I have memories of playing great desert courses with the folks that I played it with, or playing in the Northeast or in the South. So for me, it's who I share it with. It's not actually the course.
Do you have a course on your bucket list?
A course on my bucket list? Yes, and I hope to fulfill this bucket here in the next year and a half for my 50th. A bunch of us are headed to Northern Ireland and Scotland to play all the courses in Northern Ireland and down in Dublin. And then we're going to go over and do Carnoustie and St. Andrews and all of that. So that's definitely going to be a trip for the ages.
Bonnie, what's the best piece of advice, at least golf-wise, that you've been given?
The best advice is the scorecard doesn't ask for pictures. You find a way to get it in the hole.
I love that one.
That my professional coach told me that. She said, I don't care how you get it in the hole. It doesn't ask for pictures, and I have held on to that my entire life, and I tell so many people that a day, that it doesn't matter what it looks like. It's only the number you're putting on the paper.
Finally, Bonnie, can you put into words how Campbell University and this Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
Well, you know, I think I still carry on some of the roots from Campbell, is that I'm still somewhat of a small town girl. I'm not a big city girl. So I still kind of like that small town feel, which is what Campbell provides, and a very relaxed atmosphere to where you can actually, you know, you can focus on yourself. You can grow as an individual. You can, you know, grow in your academics. You can grow in your sports. And having a smaller group of people, you get to know the people a lot better versus 50,000 students. You actually get to know the people that are there, your professors. So I think I've always carried that with me. I prefer smaller crowds. I prefer smaller towns. But good things come in small packages too, right?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of how I look at it, and some of the things that, and you know, I think I went through a lot of adversity when I was at Campbell as well, just through my ups and downs of my golf game. There was a season there that I did not do very well, and just how I stuck with it and worked really hard and became, you know, an elite player to graduate from Campbell and from the golf team.
I'm Stan Cole, and our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been former golf standout Yvonne Cox Holmes. Thank you, Vonnie, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate all of this. Very grateful to be, I'm humbled to be able to do this with you today.